Hi everyone, welcome back to the Indian Music Charts podcast. This is a show where we break down the hits and analyze the trends in the Indian music industry. After a two-week break with no major movements on the charts, we are back not only to discuss a recent example of a sync deal that is making all the waves on the charts, we also have music supervisor Alex Sadie joining us to discuss what makes a good sync deal. But first, and as always, a quick look at the key movements on the charts.
So January is usually a fairly, slow period for the charts. Now we're into Feb, and there's not much news actually, but here are the key movements. At number 97, moving up all the way from number 171, is R by Roach Killer, Arif Lohar, and Deep Chandu. That's on Jazba Entertainment. There's a new entry this week at number 27. It's Pahado Me by Vishal Mishra. That's out on T-Series. Vishal and T-Series are obviously capitalizing on the success of Animal. And number two, holding steady for the fifth straight week, is Husna by Anuv Jain. Now, this has already hit number one of the daily charts, but it still hasn't managed to outstream the number one track, which is Pele Bhi Main from Animal by Mishra and Raj Shekhar. That's on T-Series, and it's eighth week at number one. But the track that we're going to focus on, actually, is the highest new entry of the week. It's new at number nine. It's a track called Akhya Gulab from the new Shahid Kapoor Kriti Sanan movie called Teri Baaton Mein Uljha Jiya. Now,
that's track, a very long name.
For very a long movie. Name. And now, some of you may know this track. It's by Mitraz. The original was just called Akhya. It was released in 2022. It was kind of like their breakout song. And so this week we decided to focus on sync deals, because this movie in particular has many sync deals. I think it's got the title of the movie, the very long Teri Baaton Mein Uljha Jiya, is actually taken from the hit song Teri Baaton Mein by Canadian Indian singer Raghav. And that was from way back in 2004. Raghav made a kind of a comeback during the pandemic, and he also, I think, re-released this track. And now, there's another version of it. It's been Tanish Bakchified, as I say.
Nice. I like that you created a word out of his name.
Yeah, for the movie. And so we have the perfect person to sort of discuss, the details and the pros and cons of sync deals. We've got Alex Sethi from Retox Music, and some of you who are, sort of regulars at conferences like All About Music may already know him. But Alec, welcome to the show, and could you please introduce yourself and your company to, some people who may not have heard about
it. Hey, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And hi to you both, and hi to everybody listening. I've been a fan from a listener point of view. So
we appreciate you.
Excited to be here. Thank you so much. No,
you always gave us feedback right from the first episode. So we're very excited to have you. And I remember telling you that we will have you at some point. And that point is now.
Here we are. That's great. So I'm a music supervisor. I have So within a month, 20 years experience in the industry of sync, licensing, music supervision, the creative side and the licensing side. I started off actually as a sync representative, sync rep, which means you have your major labels. They have an in-house sync team selling their catalog to film and TV and advertising, etc. And then you have all the indies, all the unsigned bands, all the great music coming from boutique publishers, indie labels, unsigned acts. And how do these this source of music get recognized by filmmakers? So there are people like sync reps who we collect a few of them, a group of them, and we build a catalog of our own, though we don't own any rights. We just represent them for sync deals, and we get involved with music supervisors creatively and send them music as a source and facilitate the deal. So I did that for like 8 to 10 years, And then gradually I morphed into music supervision, and I'd worked pretty much totally on advertising. So I chose that as my media just because I was working alone and I got to know the industry and I stayed in there and I enjoyed it a lot. This kind of 30 seconds, finding a perfect song and distilling the emotion, the story into 30 seconds. I think
That sounds quite challenging, actually.
It's a great art form when you look at it from that point of view. Of course, it's very commercialized and it's made possible by brands who are selling themselves. But on the other side, there is a real skill to it. So I really respect top creative people in advertising, because it's hard to say, you know, I'm introducing myself, I've already taken a couple of minutes, but to do something, to sell a whole concept, product, campaign in 15, 30 seconds is pretty amazing. So I did that. And then I started coming to India about 6-7 years ago, because I'd always looked abroad. I'm from the UK. I'd looked first in Europe, then I did a long run in Russia, which was an emerging market 15 years ago. And it was really exciting to work there in the advertising industry. They were looking for new skills, international people to come in and give their expertise. And I managed to get caught up in that rush. And then things have got tricky in Russia. So I know it's about 6-7 years ago, I started coming to India, looking at the market there, probably due to my roots, but also just thinking this is a great market. It has its own film industry that's way bigger than anything else, save Hollywood. It has everything. And I wanted to investigate.
Really, in those few years that since you started visiting, like, I think Sync in India has also grown quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
There's also very little awareness.
I can't take credit for that, but yeah, it has.
Yeah, it just so happened that those two things, like, really line up next to each other. We're not saying that our friend is responsible for it entirely, but we are saying that he is a huge contributor to it. But, well, you know, Alec, one thing, I mean, I also don't want to take it for granted that everyone listening knows what Sync means. So in maybe a very layman term, could you explain to our listeners, and especially for upcoming artists, what do we mean when we say sync, or when a song is synced? And maybe you can also talk to us on what are the various ways in which sync can happen? Like, where all can you sync your music?
Okay, sure.
Yeah. And could you also then maybe talk about Retox Music in specific, and then also about some of the major projects you've worked on, so people can get examples of, you know, the things that you're to sort of illustrate the different types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So a sink, it's not a place where you throw water or brush your teeth or wash your vegetables.
This is redefining.
This isn't suddenly become a cooking show or a household
this
show.
This is Akhila. I just have to point out that it wasn't me, as in the words of Shaggy.
Yet. The episode is still young. You can still make a PJ very soon.
So sync is S-Y-N-C. It's short for synchronization. So it's the putting together of sound and vision, basically. So image, moving image, and music. So when we talk about sync, though, I mean, of course, we know all about BGM. We all know about scores, soundtracks.
BGM is background music. We try and use acronyms that we know and use all the time, but some of our listeners may not.
Correct. Okay, I'll get that out. Yeah, so background music, soundtracks, composed music, it doesn't fall under sync. Even though the music is being put onto the image, we think of sync, if you think of a composer, you're making something specially for your film, and you then have a chance to change it and adapt it and alter it and give feedback and give notes to the composer, and they'll say it doesn't do enough here, it needs more emotion here, whatever. When you talk in pure terms about a synchronization, it's like you're taking the song off the shelf. Just like if you in the old days would go in, buy or download a piece of music that's made by an artist and you want to hear it. So now we're talking about a bit more complex cases where they've been adapted. But we're talking about, say, let's just talk about a piece of music. We buy it, the rights to use it, the license, and we pay for it to a recording music label and a music publisher. And then we have the right to use it on our, whatever it is, a Netflix show, OTT show, movie. It could be used on a ad campaign. Like I told you, I worked on many, many ad campaigns throughout my career. It could be used on a computer game. It could be on anything. So I do work as a supervisor. I work a lot with sync. I work a lot with securing the rights for a song. If an artist, if my client, filmmaker, wants to use the song as it is, or if they want to remake it, like the examples you've brought up in that have gone in the charts this week. But I also work with composers. So I also can work with briefing a composer, working with the director to come up with treatments for the composer, or which route are we going to take musically? How should this universe sound? How are we going to tell this story, whether it's a 30-second film or a three-hour movie or whatever? So some of the projects I've been lucky enough to work with in India is when I first arrived, I was thinking purely about advertising, actually. I was just taking Ubers around the city and looking at these huge Netflix billboards and Amazon Prime billboards and just thinking, how do I get into that? Okay, I'll keep going to this ad agency where I'm going and have a meeting, because that's what I know. So I worked on some really big campaigns for Vivo and other clients like Ola Electric and Tresemme. So kind of, and also brands that wanted to express themselves in this, say, international way and get away from only using composers and use licensed music.
And so then what are some songs that you use on those campaigns, just to give people an idea, like, you know?
Actually, they came to me because they wanted international songs. So we didn't use much Hindi music at all. In fact, I hadn't done, for the first few years working here, I hadn't worked on any local music licenses. So I think I got some kind of K-pop for Ola Electric. It's a really, really cool, classy little song. For Vivo, they wanted, first of all, something from the Frozen soundtrack, so the Disney song. So I went to Disney in LA and requested the rights for that. And then they actually wanted some kind of cool up-and-coming indie artists from abroad. And this was all pre-COVID. I think now I would be much more comfortable going to local Hindi artists, because this whole, for me anyway, this explosion of independent music in India has happened during and since COVID. But yeah, it was a lot of international music.
Are you seeing a change also? Like you said, you know, pre-COVID, you have your clients having a very specific ask, which is international music. Are you seeing more clients actually asking you for local independent music?
Not so much in advertising. I think, actually, if I'm totally honest with you, film industry, or at least the ad industry, in my opinion, and I'm sure there are people who will disagree, but it hasn't caught up with what's been going on musically. Oh. Or they have a way of working, or...
Is it maybe different for, let's say, OTT?
Yeah, definitely. Clued in with Netflix, and, you know, they did Friday Night Plan and Archie's and all these very kind of sync-heavy titles. I wasn't involved in those, but I've been following them and seeing that they were using a lot of independent musicians from India. That made me proud, because that's how it should be. You know, of course, the world is our oyster, but it's a really good case about great music from bands that exist, elevating a scene, elevating the character of a series, of a commercial or of a film. And having that as something local, it's really good for people watching, because they will check it out. Now you can just point your phone at a screen and Shazam what you're watching. And that helps, believe it or not, it helps us to actually trust the series or be emotionally connected with what we're watching. But it also helps the music industry, the artist, the label, whether they're a Z, a Sarigama, a Sony, whoever, or a small independent.
Whoever
they
are. You personally worked on a really big Netflix series recently, right?
Yeah, it came out last year, and it's called Guns and Gulabs. And the directors are Raj and DK.
There were a lot of sync tracks. Was it all sync tracks? Because I remember like watching it and I'm like, hey, I recognize that.
Yeah, and it was pure sync. So they weren't any real remakes. It was, everything we got, we licensed not only songwriting, but also the original recording and put it on.
What are the different ways in which a sync deal can happen? Like, is it always all license, or can it also be a buyout?
Can be a buyout, but I've really not dealt with these. It tends to be buyouts for the original songs that are made from the composer. They could be a buyout, but I would also, I don't think it's that good a thing for an artist to sell their song in a buyout. I mean, anyway, a major would never allow it to happen.
Correct, yeah.
Because they
and I think I'm asking more from the perspective of an upcoming artist, not so much a major. Like, is that something that artists are asked, like, hey, we want to buy this track and we want to make it a brand track if they're independent? Or even in those cases, do you see that, like, whether your client is a film or like ad agency or whoever it might be, do they all kind of go for a license sort of an ask?
With Viva, for example, they went for licenses. Even on the indie side, they always went for licenses. It's never happened on my watch that they've asked for a buyout. I mean, I've heard stories, but for me, they always end up being horror stories, because you want the artist to retain their rights and to be able to exploit, sorry for using this word, but it's the industry word, to exploit the song further and to grow because of that. And if that part of the pie of the money is going back to the brand or to the film, I don't think it's a great relationship. We're not talking symbiosis anymore.
Yeah.
Sure, there's some money change hands, but all the future, all the opportunities that can come from that track, from that song, are gone. They're cut. And then how do you put a value on that?
No, that's a great call out. You know, like you said, wherever you do hear about buyouts, it's probably not the best case scenario. And like you said, it's usually a horror story. And like, I think for any upcoming artist who's listening to us right now, if you're 100% independent, and you do get asked for it, please know that the industry norm is license, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. At least don't let anyone tell you that this is how, we always do this way, or this is how it's done. It's not. No.
Yeah. And if you could just take a step back and maybe tell us, about the different ways. So Guns and Gulabs, that has a lot of music from the 70s. Is that right? Like from the, it was more like from the retro era, right?
So, yeah, it's a period piece. It's set in a fictional town in 1990.
Oh, okay, 1990.
So we use stuff from the 80s.
Oh,
we
God, could... Amit, are you Gen Z? Are you calling the 90s retro? Are you one of them?
I thought it was 70s. That's why I said I was shocked it was 90s. So you used stuff from the 80s.
I have to interrupt you. I was on a call today with a sync rep. An international sync rep, and she said that she deals with a lot of old music from the 80s, and she said retro can now be applied to the 2000s. So I don't know. I feel horrifically old now.
Oh God. Is there a spot in a museum where we can go live?
Yes, please.
So was this all old Bollywood, the tracks that were in Guns and Gulabs? This is primarily Bollywood?
Yeah, there was some old Bollywood tracks. There was one old South Indian track that was used, and then there were two and the reason you use these tracks was to create the universe. So why do you do sync when maybe for a lot of Indians, if you have anyone from the storytelling film side watching, why? Because it gives you an extra string in your bow. So for example, in Guns and Gulabs, there are two Western tracks used. And there's a character who wants to write a love letter to the woman he has his eyes on and, completely smitten with her from a distance, doesn't know how to do it. So he gets one of the school kids to write letters. And the school kid goes, gets his cassette, whoever remembers what they are, and plays it back and rewinds and rewinds. And he's listening to a song by Foreigner. And he's trying to write down the lyrics and make the lyrics into the love letter. And it works because it's Foreigner, because people know the song, people remember it, or even if they weren't there, in they weren't alive or around at that time, they know
Which
it
from
their
it?
Parents. Waiting for a girl like you. Waiting for a girl like you. Now imagine if you got your composer and said, okay, we have a great composer. He can make stuff sound retro. He has all the right synths. He has all the right production techniques. He can get a singer. They can use old mics, blah, blah, blah. They can make it sound exactly from the 80s. But you're telling the audience this kind of, you know, suspension of disbelief. We believe a lot of things we see on the screen. But somehow with music, you tell the audience, okay, this is a hit from the 80s, but you've never heard of it. This is a hit in that universe. And he's rewinding. You don't actually know the lyrics because you never heard this song, but it was a hit. And we made the lyrics in English and it's just too much. It doesn't make sense. You're asking too much of the audience.
It's a storytelling tool in that sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we've got two huge examples internationally right now that are sort of really great examples of this, right? There's Murder on the Dance Floor from 2002, I think, by Sophie Alex-Bextor, which is now re-peaked at number two in the UK charts after being a part of Saltburn. And there's another track by Natasha Bedingfield called Unwritten, which was a hit again about 20 years ago and now is a big part of this movie, this rom-com called Anyone But You. And these two tracks are back in the top 20 in the UK, all thanks to being, you know, synced in these movies. These sort of Saltburn, I don't know whether it was released in cinemas, but it sort of basically after it was released on OTT, it's sort of taken off. And, you know, Anyone But You was a surprise box office hit. So again, like, I just wanted, is there any major difference between when a sync is done for, say, a film or a TV series or an ad, or are the mechanics of it pretty much the same?
I would say take ads, trailers, all form of publicity, kind of separate them slightly. I mean, the mechanics, the contracts are the same. But when you want to do something for a movie or a series, then you want things for perpetuity. You want for all media. There are even funny clauses in contracts like all media known now or that will be known in the future, asking for the
so
universe,
spooky.
Not just the planet, not just the world.
Oh my God.
The universe. So just in case,
if we colonize
Mars.
Elon Musk wants to listen to, you know, watch any movie when he goes out of space, he won't get sued for it. Or
I love that. It's so wild that, you know, it is literally someone's job. It's a lawyer's job to think about where can movies be exported to 100 years from now, or I don't know, maybe 20 years from now. You never know. I have no idea what Elon Musk is up to, right?
But this happened because people got burnt. So I can give you one example is the first show. This shows my age. The first show that really got into sync music internationally was Miami Vice. And actually the songs that got used in there were like songs like by Phil Collins, like artists that we know now, like, and they're huge stars. Their songs, okay, they were on majors and the majors fed the songs to the show and it was just a new way of working. But their songs got to number one the next week. Everything was printed in the newspaper. We didn't have the internet then. The next day, what songs did they use in Miami Vice? All those songs would climb up the charts and sell loads. And now if you try and look online for a lot of these series of Miami Vice, they don't exist. They don't exist online. They're not there because they didn't have those clauses. So they could use it for TV and then no one had thought
that OTT would become a thing.
No one knew there'd be a delivery system even on
the
internet.
Oh, you're still a delivery system. I'm very far ahead.
I'm on 1985.
Oh, okay. You're a blockbuster.
So there wasn't even DVDs. The videos were just starting, you know, just it was that. So that's why they need these things there, because now if you wanted to watch something like that, you have to go out and buy it physically and get it delivered to you. physically. You can't actually watch it. So that's why they have to cover themselves. And that's why if sync was to become a big thing, then it has to work not only creatively, but for the lawyers, for the business people, for everyone involved. Like, we've paid this much for this song, but now we can't put our series on. Everything else works. All the actors can get paid the residuals. Everything can happen. But the music is preventing it because maybe someone's asking for much more money down the line than if it had all been done at the right time, at the same time.
That can really affect the P&L of a show or a movie, right? And the thing that I also want to know from you is, right, obviously, an artist, when they look at sync, and you brought up this example, right, on Miami Vice, a track goes up, the next thing you know, it's so much more popular than it was before it went up, right? It's topping the charts. So it's definitely a promotional tool, right? But it's also a source of revenue, right? Because there's so many artists, and I know, Amit, you have some stats on this, right, where their total pie of sync revenue has actually increased over time, right? Like, at one point when it was nothing, it was probably at zero, it became one, it goes to 10, right? It's a whole revenue stream. One question is, A, just from your view of independent music as you've seen it, are you seeing that increasing across the board, or is it more the more famous indie artists, they are the ones who are getting these sync requests? And the second thing that I want to ask you is about if an artist were to be approached by a supervisor like you, or a composer saying, "Hey, I want to use your track in this movie or in the show," how do you price it? How do you give a quote? Because, or do they give you a quote? How does it work?
Okay. First question is my opinion. I think the so-called bigger indie artists are the ones getting still more of the deals. It's just about visibility. And maybe let's say the ones who have more visibility in Mumbai, in Bombay, maybe because that's where it's getting
the film
music
industry
is,
and all of the places where you can get synced to here, right?
Exactly. That's where the deals are made. So if you're there, or if you're often there, or if you're known there, or if you're represented there, then I think it gives you a big edge, because sync is still a very, very new thing in India. One thing about India is you pick up things so quickly. I mean, you learn and pick up and excel in things very quickly. But still, I'd say it's still new. And I saw last year what I was explaining about Raj and DK, how they use the music, it was, for me, very new in India. It could be done. Yeah. I was impressed in a good way. But it's still...
Yeah, and I just want to sort of point out here, Akhila, you mentioned stats, and one of the artists that we can sort of share stats about, because I've reported about this in the past, is Ritviz. And Ritviz is somebody who's had several syncs, and an indie artist, like you mentioned, Alec. I mean, when I interviewed him back in 2020, and this is, again, post-pandemic, right in the midst of the pandemic, his manager told me that in 2020, his sync component of his earnings moved up from 1% in 2019 to 25%. And the reasons why this happened is that the makers of the mobile game, Garena Free Fire, used his song Jeet in a promotional music video. YouTube used Liggy for a Diwali theme campaign. Cadbury used Udgaye in a TV commercial for the Perk chocolate bar. Now, over time, he's regularly had, syncs, and even though, for instance, now live music came back, so in 2022, for instance, live music went back to being a huge part of his income, but sync remained a good solid 10%. And part of this, he said, also was coming from smaller indie films. Like, he mentioned something called Americanish, which sounds like a US production, and then also the movie Thank You for Coming, which was produced by Riya Kapoor. So that movie actually had a lot of syncs. I think even Anup Jain track was synced in that, a couple of other Indian artists. So it's interesting that, I mean, although Thank You for Coming is not a big budget film, it also stars some pretty mainstream Bollywood actors. So that is kind of showing you how even Bollywood is getting in on the game, even in the slightly sort of alternative kind of movies, even if it's not so much the mainstream ones. And then Ritviz, I mean, not only that, I remember Rahul, his manager, saying, I can't remember what he, but he said it was an 8-figure or 9-figure sum that he actually scored for scoring a couple of tracks. I think one of his older hits, and then also a couple of new tracks that he synced for, I think, Miss Marvel, the TV show. Again, you know, international production. So probably
and like, I think another show that had so many syncs, you know?
So going back to, sorry to sort of interrupt you, Alec, but like, if you could just, within that context now, sort of address this question that, you know, essentially how do, I mean, we're talking Ritwiz and we're talking like, say, maybe an upcoming indie artist. How does it work for them? You know, what should they be looking out for when it comes to sort of the pricing of these things?
Pricing is always tricky. So, you know, if it's an artist like that, they'll have management or people around them who can help them with that. Now, if you're really a very, very up and coming, starting out indie artist, and I don't know, maybe you have a friend who's in a film, or somehow your music gets to be picked, then it's very hard to know. And the only advice I can give is just try and get advice, try and get some professional advice. You have some really good media lawyers, for example, in India, who are very approachable, I would say, compared to international rest of the world media lawyers that I've come across.
It's an option that you could literally get a lawyer on board, and then they negotiate for you and they figure what the right price is.
Just talk to them, have a casual conversation, and and you know, they'll understand that you're very young, you're very new, and they will try and keep it. I think the ones I know would try and keep the conversation going for bigger and better things, where you will need them on a retainer or something later down the line. It might just be a bit of friendly advice, you know. When I started out, I was a sync agent, and there's a story that I had a couple of years to wait for my first deal. I was trying, knocking on doors. Nobody knew who I was. I'd come from a chemistry background, so I had no experience or name in the film industry. And I'd got these musicians together just through having a radio show and being a DJ on the side. And I got offered... or one guy from Scandinavia, he offered me a potential deal for a TV commercial. It wasn't anything big. It was just something. And I took the wrong advice. And I realized I didn't get it from a lawyer or someone who knew. I don't know how, but I got the wrong advice. And I charged too much. And then I stuck with that. And of course, the person never worked with me again, and told me, you know, they didn't have even half of that money, and I lost the deal. Now, that was just me representing someone. If you are an artist and you have a song and you're really attached to it, and someone wants to use it, of course, let's forget about buyouts. I think let's not go down that road. But for sync deals, then you have to think, well, what is? Ask for as much information as you can about the scene it's being put on, about the brand it's for, about even ask for the media plan or a rough media plan. Because in Europe, they give you a breakdown of the media plan.
That's very interesting.
Germans and the Germanic countries actually were pricing their syncs based on a percentage of the media plan as a rough guide. But that doesn't happen in India, but at least you get an idea of where they're going to use it, how are they going to use it, for how long, how important is it?
Yeah, sorry, for the layperson, can we explain what the media plan is?
Media plan is I make a commercial, I make an ad film. Now, what do I do with it? I want to put it on air. I want to put it on in the commercial breaks between programs. I want to... put it on as the film you skip when you try to get to your YouTube video. I want to put it on the radio as well, make a radio version. And I need to spend money to buy that. Now, when you're talking about TV media usage, well, if it's going to be on during the final of the World Cup cricket, or if it's going to be on at 3 a.m. in the morning when they're showing a repeat of a 20-year-old soap opera, the price is going to change very much of that 30 seconds of airtime that you're going to put, I want to put my commercial on. So you get an idea on the size of the budget, how they're going to, if it's like 3 months and a huge media budget, you know that they're buying very good space, very good media airtime, and they're going to use it in very prominent places. If it's much lower and it's only, say, online, I mean, I've seen some online campaigns where even, say, the rights holder of the music have said they showed me the media plan, it's so small, I can't even imagine they're going to use it a lot. They're going to run out of Google space before it can be on YouTube for long, because you also buy when you're online, you buy the media time by the number of hits. So it's kind of a rolling thing. Like if a lot of people are clicking on it, you're paying more because your ad is being viewed more. If they're not clicking on it to skip it, so then the price goes up. So that's the kind of rolling thing. So that's the media plan and the media budget, if you like.
Yeah, and I can see get advice, because you know it's actually pretty complicated. And like even the media plan itself, and I can say this as a marketer, like the consolidated media plan is actually a very complex document with multiple sheets. Even the summary of it, it takes someone with a certain amount of experience to sort of break it down to you and say that, listen, this media plan is worth 10 crores. And usually with big brands, that's the kind of numbers you're looking at.
Yeah. But you just want to get an idea. You don't want a complete breakdown, but maybe like, I used to ask for like, which channels will it be on in that country? Yeah. And they would say, it's the national channels or some cable channels that, you know, no one's viewing right at the end of the remote control.
So the most common use, I think, a lot of our listenership tends to be independent artists. And the most common way that we've seen their tracks being synced is on sort of OTT shows, right? On web series. So when it comes to that, I mean, what are some of the things that they should be asking for?
Again, ask for the scenario. Ask how the music is used. If I was, I listen to songs where I think there's, it's so well made, it's so, or the lyrics are so powerful, or the voice is so textured. And just ask yourself, is it worth to get a very low amount of money for it to be put in the very, very background of a cafe scene with spoons clinking, cups and people talking over it? Or is it, do I want to use this in, you know, in a powerful scene, a montage, which is like where the story is propelled forward from one place to another place in a drama or a comedy where you don't hear much voices of the actors. You just see a lot of things happening in short clips, one after another.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That would make more sense. Is it going to be on the credits?
That's a good thing to also let artists know that, you know, use your discretion, because, you know, your music, you have complete control of it. So make sure it's heard in the best way possible. Sometimes it can be very tempting to just get that first sync deal, right? To just be associated with the movie. And I know it's like easier said than done, but like sometimes you just want to be like, no, I want to let this opportunity go, because I rather wait for the right sync opportunity to come for this track. And one of the things that, or rather one of the most important things that I think a lot of artists who are listening right now would have as a question is, okay, I understand that, you know, there's certain things I got to keep in mind. When I do get an offer, I need to talk to a lawyer. I need to get the right kind of advice. But a few steps behind that, who do they even get in touch with if they want to, you know, get their music synced? Is it someone like you? Is it a supervisor, OTT? Who do they go to?
So this is the big question in India. I mean, around the world, like I said, we have this in India, you have the majors and they have an in-house sync team. So that's a team that is responsible for getting in touch with film producers, film directors, advertising agencies, and saying, we have this catalog, it's great, this is X thousand tracks, and we're here for you and we'll help you. Will price competitively, et cetera, et cetera. Now, they won't obviously lift a finger for anyone outside their catalog. That's not what they're there for. And then you have all the independents. So hopefully the people who are listening to this. And Then you have sync reps for them around the world. And in India, we have that starting to grow. So, and you also have, say, also independent publishers. So the only one I really know of are Ashil Fole started. He's been very active in publishing. And, of course, Atul with Turnkey. You can always send them your music. They're generous people. They're open-minded people. They're curious. They want to find the next big thing. They're really trying to make the Indian market work in this international way, and they get sync. So there are people like that. But you see, I'm only able to list two, which is a shame. And then there are companies like Dibble. And then going back to Ashil, he has Sync Mama. And these are kind of companies that represent artists and work as a rep. Because if you imagine 100 independent artists all contacting me separately and sending me their music separately, some through LinkedIn, some on email, some on Instagram, some on however, WhatsApp, and all sending me their music and then following up.
Outside your house with a boombox over the head?
Yeah, maybe that would happen too. get a nice European holiday out of it, but maybe they wouldn't find me.
We should tell me, because you're in Budapest?
I'm based in Budapest, but I'm from London. Okay. And I work in India, so okay. Work it out yourselves.
Yeah. kind of difficult to do the boombox thing, but yeah, I mean, so it's not a good idea for them to email you. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm not saying it's not a good idea. I'm just saying there's only so much bandwidth I have. There's only so much new music, and now I'm, you know, working on a project. So then if it's not, when a music supervisor is working on it, say I was working on Guns and Gulabs now, I would only be looking for this kind of music and only be thinking about Raj and DK and only trying to help them and think of what do we have to do to further this story. So if someone comes with, and I've got this really cool urban hip hop, and it might be really cool, but I'm just not in the right headspace to understand it. I'll listen to it and I'll say it's good, but I won't be able to help. So sorry, just to finish my point. So these 100 people, if they all would sign with, say, a Dibble or a Sync Mama or whoever, a Turnkey, and then I have one person who knows how to search their catalog, who understands sync, and who has those 100 artists, and they'll send me the right music when I ask for it, when I go for it and say, we need this kind of music. And they'll say, okay, oh, you need the hip hop thing. Okay, we have this and this and this guy. Okay.
Yeah, so that's a great endorsement for all of them. And we know all of them, and they're all great guys and veterans of the industry.
Sorry if I've missed anyone out. I was
going to ask you about like this company called Fairplay. Have you heard of it? They sort of have trying to simplify the whole sync thing, where you essentially just go and it's almost like shopping for something, like you said, literally going off the shelf, right? But is that something you're familiar with?
Yeah, not for them expressly, but definitely I've worked a lot with stock libraries, where you buy something off the shelf and there's a rate card where there's no even human interaction, no even email. You just go online, download something. Either you or the client will pay online, and then and then that's done. I'm familiar with that. I'm not so familiar with Fairplay, to be honest, but I've heard of them. I know they exist. Yeah. I know they're out there.
So that's sort of like a simpler way also for artists to, you know, to use. Lastly, I wanted to ask, you know, coming back to these tracks that we, you know, sort of sparked our discussion today. Now, both of them have sort of been, they're not the original versions that have been used in the track in the films. It's the original artists, so it's not like a recreation or a remake. The original artists are very much involved, but they are sort of newer versions of the songs. So how is that, does that make any difference to the whole, you know, sort of the dynamics of the deal, wherein, you know, the Mitras have made a new version of their song? It's still very much their song, they own all the rights, but they made a new version of the track for T-Series. So does it becoming again a thing about specific rights over here?
I'm sure that, I mean, it's partly creative to reimagine a track or to make a song with a good message or some kind of cultural context, but renew it for something new. But it's also a rights thing. I mean, maybe it could be, I don't know, it could be that the original masters with a different label, there are the labels in T-Series, and maybe T-Series are working on this soundtrack and they get this. I don't know the ins and outs of this one, but when the original artist is involved, I think it's very easy. Then if the original artist is not involved, say you're making a cover of a known song, then they will often ask, especially international, where sync is a long used process and well defined and everybody knows what it is. The original artist will ask for approval or to hear the cover, just to make sure there's nothing untowards or anything they disagree with or anything that puts their composition in a bad light.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard horror stories about this where, I mean, a major label that has already been named in this show has used a track by an artist who's already been named in this show for one of their movies without their approval. And, reached out for a deal. The artist has said no, and they've gone ahead and used the track or sort of remade the track, as you mentioned, sort of made a new version of it, not got any permission. And then, that's what happens. So we speak of horror stories, that kind of thing also happens. But I would guess that maybe in this case, for this particular movie, Teri Baaton Mein Uljha Jiya, the Raghav track is, I think, done with Tanish Bakshi. So that might have different kinds of, might be a slightly different kind of situation, whereas the Mitra's track, they themselves have redone. So they've just made it a little more Bollywood sounding. Mm-hmm. So
it's essentially a remix by the artist. Yeah.
Remix of their own track by the artist, but it's still very much a sync, right? I mean, that's...
Of course, it's still a sync. Yeah.
Cool. I think we've sort of pretty much asked you everything there is to know about Sync 101.
And I think this is going to be the one episode that I'm going to send to people when they don't know what Sync is. I'm like, just listen to this. This is it.
Yeah. And I think so much that we can talk about that we could probably do a second episode. Thanks.
Wow. That would be great. So I really enjoyed this. So Thank you for
being very open with your story. Yeah. And I think you really given like artists a lot to think about. And like for many of the artists who are listening and, who could be getting their first sync deal in the coming year or coming years, I think you really equip them with the information that they need to be able to make the right decisions. And thank you so much on behalf of all of them.
I hope so. And I'm not always available, but if anyone has any questions, you can find me on socials. You can look up my company, Retox Music Supervision. If you have any questions, I can always try and help, or at least maybe just point you in the right direction. And maybe it'll be a very quick exchange because I don't have time, but I would don't take it personally, but I would always like to help. Especially, I come from the underground independent music world way, way back. So I always have a lot of time, admiration.
Hey, that's all of us. And now we're here.
And that's good to know because I mean, we should point out you are kind of like the middleman, right? Between the artist and the syncer, and the syncy. So you are.
And syncy. Those two terms need to be a thing.
Yeah, but it sounds like my drain is blocked and I need to move the sinky, but by the sinker, going back to this. Sorry for these terrible puns.
I mean, Amit is in the room. It had to happen.
Well, I didn't start it. I didn't. I have to say
you
I was
an influencer.
One.
I felt the vibe.
Yeah, you're an influencer.
All the way in.
Oh, yeah, we can... Yeah. We can employ these terms for work purposes, of course.
Yes.
Change of loop.
Yes. Thanks so much, Alec. It was great to have you. And like he said, you can reach out to him. There's also a bunch of other industry people that you could reach out to, a bunch of companies that you could research also that do these kind of things. And that brings us to the end of our episode. And we will, of course, see you soon. But before that, we just wanted to share with you that we have been long listed for an award, surprisingly. We are on the long list for the HT Smartcast Podmasters Awards, and we're in the arts and entertainment category. And it is the most competitive category of them all. There are 29 nominees in total. So we have, basically what happens is that the out of these 29, whoever gets the highest votes will be shortlisted and make the top three. And from there, a jury will pick the winner. So the only chances we have of ever making the top three is if you vote for us. So we're going to include the link to the voting form. And if you've made it thus far to this above average length episode, thank you, firstly, for listening. And secondly, it's obvious that you enjoy what we do. So if you can, it would be amazing if you could vote. And yeah, of course, we'll keep you posted on if we do make the shortlist. But either way, we're super grateful for you. So thank you to all our listeners. Thank you, Alec. And we'll be back soon.